folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so today's episode is our final one for the year and also the final JREP, Japan Real Estate Experts panel session for the year. We were one man short again, but we did manage to get a nice little discussion going, just looking back at how we got started with the JREP panel and where we are with it. And then we dove right into a few other topics, mainly insurance coverage, premiums, claims and compensation, and how these differ between standard policies, added coverage for short-term stays, death in the property, and others. We also discussed the balance between response time and cost savings when you're attending to maintenance items, especially in tenanted properties, and also getting renovation and repair estimates on your own versus getting the estimates via your property managers. And finally, we had a nice long chat about adding those extra convenient features to your home, both old and newly built. What are they? Are they worth it? Spoiler, they usually are. So a nice chat to end the year on. Hope you enjoyed as much as we did. Kick back, tune in, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Note.
Okay, so last session of the year for the Japan Real Estate Experts panel. Exciting yes. stuff. Minus one. Matt is not with us again today.
Yes. He's tending his goats, isn't he?
Yeah. Goats, monkeys.
Goats and monkeys.
This has been really interesting this year. So it kind of started off with Clubhouse, which took off in January, I think, is when we got on there. And then we started to do, I guess, for some of the listeners, just some history. It started off being on Clubhouse as a bit of a room, a real estate room, and the occasional chat. I think I was doing something like that with my regular kind of real estate rooms. And then I know Ziv, we started to do something together a little bit, and Tracy, like, you know, we'd known each other separately through different meetups and different groups and whatnot. And then sure, Tracy jumped on, and then we came across Matt as well, and his unique, the Akia. We thought the three of us would be a good sort of holistic approach to the real estate aspect. And then we met Matt, which was something I wasn't thinking about, the Akia sort of business. I didn't even know that functioned as a business model as he had presented, but he came in and that was also another great, exciting sort of variation on the real estate theme. Lots of good topics, but yeah, I jumped on the business in Japan. I think every Monday they do the business in Japan group on Clubhouse has a founded in Japan session with some, like, it'll talk about like startups and business founders and what have you. And I was just talking to them on Monday. I jumped on there as their last one for the year and chatted to some of those guys, and we're reflecting a little bit about how how Clubhouse was at the start of the year. And then this became just a platform. We were doing our regular rooms on Clubhouse. And as that dwindled down, we moved to, you know, we thought, okay, yeah, let's do this Zoom sort of podcast/video thing. But if you think about it, it's been since basically what, February or March this year. We're already coming to late December.
We haven't run out of things to talk about yet, which is really interesting. So there's always something that's popping up. So I guess there is. Also we could, like all four of us can talk underwater with a mouthful of cement about real estate. So
yeah, yes. I was going to try to imagine that scenario. That
was but, it's funny because we run across the same topics again and again, even when we talk about it. But when I speak to people who actually contact them, they keep asking the same questions, even if they are listeners of the podcast or viewers of YouTube. So I guess there's always a new, like in Emil's case, everyone keeps asking how much they can borrow and what sort of thing the bank will look at. In our case, we keep getting asked about what's a typical yield in each city. Tracy, I suppose, always gets asked about how to do Minpaku profitably and if you can do it with your own holiday home. Like the same topics and questions keep coming up again and again, right?
Well, I got an interesting one this week actually from a listener who was asking about some nuts and bolts things like, how to get the proper insurance for Minpaku. And I thought, I'm in the process of introducing them to my insurance company. So, and because obviously when you're running a Minpaku business, the regular Chintai insurance just won't cover it. And you should never, ever, and this is a bit of a cautionary tale for people, just never, ever rely on, the Airbnb or the guarantees that they give you. You should always have your own insurance, and a regular chintai, a regular renter's insurance, so like house and contents and even personal liability, just won't cover you if God forbid something happens. So having your grown up pants on and having that provisions in place is really essential. So that's what I've been helping other people with.
There are particular products and policies out there for Minpaku owners, are there?
There are, yes. Yeah. So these are covering, so the policy needs to cover things like damage, willful damage and also neglectful damage and also accidental damage. So that's of person and property. Let's say someone has done something like put a heater, drying clothes inside of a cupboard with a heater, and the whole house burns down, for example. And because it's not the regular person who's staying there, because it's not someone who's on a lease, it's someone that's booked on a platform, the insurance like the regular homeowner's insurance just will not cover you. So you've done a house, it's gone. But this way, if you have the Minpaku, it says on the insurance policy, there will be different people in and out. And it's covering you because, any time that an insurance company can try and get out of making a payment, they will. Yeah. So you need to make sure that your business activities are listed very clearly on the insurance policy. Otherwise you won't be covered.
And how much more expensive are the premiums in this case?
I mean, it's about, for me, it's about double. So normal renter's insurance for a chintai is what, nimayen, like 20,000 for 2 years. And I pay about 20,000 for 1 year. So it's not massive. It's not a huge expense. But I've never claimed. I'm a great customer. I'll just pay, Yeah. But, of course, I was just saying to you before we got online that I've been with my accountant all morning, and these are the sort of costs that are classed as a business expense. So there are certain withholding tax of things, and it's it comes off your profits. So it's part of your red ink that you can offset any profits, and then it's only then on the profits that you pay the corporate taxes. Taxes are very confusing here.
We're frequent claimers, actually. I think our insurers hate our guts.
What are you claiming for?
The typical ones are usually if a boiler breaks down, it leaks water into the apartment under you. So that always needs to be covered. And unfortunately, the second most typical one is a tenant died in the property. That happens a lot with elderly tenants.
They've died.
What's the insurance?
What's
the insurance approach with that? What happens with insurance? I'm curious.
There's a special clause you need to add. It's not part of your normal like fire and accident insurance. It's a special clause that you need to add to the policy, and it's pretty cheap for what it covers. I think it's under 5,000 yen a year. And what it covers you for is amazing. So it covers you for up to 1 million yen in related cleaning and renovation expenses, which usually for the smaller one-bedroom apartments usually covers almost all of your expenses, if not all of them. And then even more importantly, it covers you for 2 years of reduced or no rents. Right. So as long as you show that you're advertising the property for rent again, and you can advertise it at the same price, you don't have to reduce the rental amount that you're listing it for. And you can just advertise it in one little place, doesn't matter where. So you're going to be getting, at the end of the 2 year period, you're going to get full rental compensation for that entire period from the insurance company.
Is that because someone's died there and you have to put that on the, you have to put that on your advertising that someone's recently died, and because of that then people are uncomfortable about renting, and so you're
that's covered. The idea behind it.
Genius.
The stigma is not bad if it's a natural death, if it's just like a Jisan or Basan who just passed away in the I mean, the people are aware of it because it has to be on the listing at least for the next tenant in line. But it doesn't carry the stigma of like a murder or a suicide or anything like that. But still, next tenant is probably going to be paying at least a little bit less than what the previous one was, just because of that clause. And they cover you for it. So even if the next tenant, even if you happen to, I mean, we don't work too hard to find a tenant in the next 2 years because we're getting compensation. But even if we happen to find someone and they actually lease the place at a lower rent amount than the previous, then the insurance company will compensate us for the difference. Yeah.
Wait.
About that though, so I'm pretty sure if it's a natural death, you don't have to notify future guests. Whereas if it's suicide or murder, you are required to notify.
It used to be kind of vague. I think they've sort of just recently, a few months ago, they passed a clarification legislation that sort of specifies exactly which cases don't need to be notified. But the property managers still do. I mean, they don't want people to come yelling at them and, you know, banging on tables in the office because you haven't told me that.
Yeah.
So they always do. And if we sell as well, if we sell a property, the next buyer also needs to know.
Yeah, they're definitely for future sales and whatnot. It's the ones like that. That's what I deal with more so. It's the stigmatized property that you could book in, which are non-natural causes of death in the property. Yeah. So generally suicide or murder. And murders aren't that common, like, but we do see the suicide ones. I mean, often the questions will be like, what happened?
Haven't had any of those, knock on wood, to date, only natural causes. Yeah.
I didn't want to talk about the insurance though. So, you know, you're talking about that. There's also, for when you buy a house, you know, I'll touch on this as well. There's fire and earthquake insurance, like usually the home insurance. Fire insurance, you can get 1 year, 3 year fire, like, or any kind of duration up to 35 years when people buy a home. It's quite common. And we can actually put that insurance cost into the mortgage. Okay, so for a house, a three-story house, or like a 100 square meter house, generally you can get the maybe anywhere between 60 to 100,000 yen a year is what the cost of the insurance is for that property. And you can get and it comes with earthquake insurance as well. However, if you get over 10, like over 5 years, the earthquake portion is only valid for the first 5 years. So let's say it's 100,000 yen a year and you get a 5 year policy, it's 500,000 yen. Maybe half of that cost is earthquake coverage and half of that is regular fire and disaster and accidental, you know, damage, etc. What from year 6 to year 10 on that policy, you're only going to be paying about 250,000 yen equivalent, right? Because there's no earthquake coverage for that longer duration. So when you look at the policy, if you want to get a 10-year policy, it looks significantly cheaper. But that's because after year five, there's the earthquake coverage isn't there. Okay, so personally for me, I renew my policy every 5 years.
But you do. You can renew it after those 5 years. Yeah, maybe not. Price.
You can. But it's a bit of a chore as well. I guess it's a separate thing. It's actually maybe the same thing. It gets it's easy to forget. Whereas if the whole policy expires, it's easy to remember. Okay, I just need to renew the full policy, fire and earthquake. One of the benefits, though, to doing the entire, like to do a longer duration, even like, you know, 10 years or 20 years, is you get a slight discount on the monthly premium. Mm. Not a lot, but the bigger fact is if in, say, 8 years' time or 10 years' time, if you try to renew, maybe the valuation of the building is different. And the cost of the insurance is different. If you prepay, if you sign the contract at the beginning, then it's kind of fixed. Whereas in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, you go to renew, maybe the premiums have increased or for less coverage. Okay, so it's kind of just locks it in place. So that's some of the benefits.
With our insurance as well, we have a policy because we live there. I think part of the policy as well is that we've got bike insurance. So basically it covers us for and also our child for when we're riding our bike. So to and from home and, you know, he goes to school or walking to school. And I think it's like if on our bikes, if we hit somebody.
Yes, third party is always covered 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, so if we're hurt or if we hurt somebody else, then we're covered. So that's a benefit of having that all together. I've spoken because I've got so many insurance policies with this particular agent. I have been pushing him and hounding him, and I'm like going, "I've got so many policies with you. Where's my discount? You know, we've got the car now. We've got the moving company. We've got we've got the car insurance and also the." You know, this is an aside, my husband runs a moving company. And so we actually have the contents of a customer's, up to $100,000 worth of stuff is covered. So we've got everything on insurance policies, but there's no discount based on keeping everything within the one company. Like I'm used to that in Australia, but here there's no bundling available. But
what's really attractive for us, because we work with the same agent and the same insurance company for all of our customers. So that's like 200 properties that they've got insured through us. And what it really does, I don't think there's a major discount as well, but what it really does, like the claim process. Remember I was saying before, insurance companies will always try to dodge having to pay out a claim. They are just completely compliant. Like whenever we make a claim, tick, tick, tick. There you go. Like there's no argument or prove this or prove that. They're aware that they're making more than enough. So they're happy to pay out when they need to.
I've never made a claim. But you know, we're talking about boilers and you were talking about various things because on a short-term rental, our maintenance systems are so, so robust. Touch wood. Touch robot, you know, because, you know, I can't have any downtime at all because I've got, it's not like a long-term guest can put up with, a long-term tenant can put up with, you know, a couple of days of things not working. But short-term guests will not tolerate things not working. So our maintenance schedule is really, proactive and making sure that we're not fixing things that are broken. We're fixing things before they get broken. So, you know, air conditioners get cleaned on a regular basis, even if they need it or not, they get done and boilers get checked and we bulletproof the houses so that there's very little problem. So we've never needed, again, touch wood, touch everything, that we've never needed to make a claim yet. And fortunately, no one's died or had an accident.
With long-term tenants, though, we have had the long-term tenants move out, and that was 100% the landlord's fault. Like, you know, middle of the summer, air conditioner unit breaks down. So yeah, it's not a legally life-threatening emergency that you have to sort of fix without getting, but they were starting to now get me another estimate and why is that so expensive. They took a good few weeks doing it and the tenant just left mid-lease, and we didn't charge them an early vacating fee because they were absolutely right to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I've got properties in Australia as well. And whenever the management company in Australia will contact me saying, you know, there's that issue, yeah, just send someone out there.
Yeah,
I mean, well, like someone has to get sent out anyway. The longer you wait, the longer it it will take, especially with like those repairs and stuff. I find any appliance repair, if you send out like, you know, especially like, you know, washing machine, air conditioners, if you send out the manufacturer, if you contact the manufacturer and they send out their service person, it tends to be this like that is the fair price quote. You can maybe get it for a bit cheaper, but you're talking, you know, between anyway 30,000 to 50,000 yen, right? How much are you gonna say? Maybe 10,000 yen, right? It's not gonna be anywhere, or even 20,000 yen, right? It's not enough to do the headache once you have an upset tenant. It's easy to please a tenant by fixing things quickly.
A vacancy is always going to be more expensive.
Yeah, but once they're upset, you just need to get onto it.
Right. Well, and for us in our business, I actually have in storage 2 to 3 washing machines, 2 to 3 fridges. We've got all that stuff. So, you know, if a washing machine's broken down, I've gone around there and swapped it out immediately. Fridges have broken down and I've swapped them out immediately. It's like, well, it's not your problem, it's my problem. And I've taken it away and then either fixed it or disposed of it. So, yeah, fortunately, it's quite easy to get white goods here. Yeah. It's not even worth fixing them. It's just swap them out immediately.
It's funny, people don't realize, not just when you have a tenant, but also between tenants. Let's say you've got a vacancy and there's stuff that needs to be done in between tenants. Like you have to renovate, you have to repair some stuff. The amount of time that people sometimes not thinking about, they start arguing with us. And well, we're not even making any profit. It's not like money that goes in our pocket, but they start arguing with us that this and this and that is, you know, $200 more expensive than it should be. But by the time we get 3 different companies to give you 3 different estimates on that same thing, this is going to be an extra month of rental income that you could have made if you would have just gone ahead and fixed the damn thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about that.
Yeah, I think that's why when we have a few, like just a renovation company or a maintenance company that you kind of trust and they've worked with many times, you know they're going to give you the good price off the bat.
Yeah.
Okay. Or like, yeah, and it's a fair price. It may not be the cheapest. You could always get something cheaper. But, you know, instead of like, you know, for my air conditioner cleaning, right, I think we pay about 15,000 yen a unit when they fully take it apart. And usually our units are a bit complex. If we really look around, maybe we can get it for 12,000 yen a unit. But, you know, these guys, we have them regular. They just go and they do it. And there's no muck around. And they invoice us. And it's just so much easier. Send a wallpapering or anything like that. So I think you can, if you really shop around, you can find something cheaper. But the amount of time it takes, and especially when it's a property, time off the market is lots of money.
Yeah.
Right? Anytime where someone can't stay there, it's not like I'm trying to buy a new phone or trying to buy a new laptop. You can try to find, instead of paying 180,000 yen, maybe you can find the same one for 165. You can save your 15,000 yen after doing 2 or 3 days of price hunting and research.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not worth it with a property that's generating that much per night.
We do have some cases, like, for example, a particular property manager that we're very happy to work with because they find tenants really quickly and they place them really quickly. They do a good job. But the estimates that they provide for renovations or repair always tend to be a bit on the higher side. And in those cases, just because we've done so many of those, and again, the perfect example is a hot water boiler system, the quotes that you get can be significantly different, like same sort of apartment, same sort of size, you know, in liters, hot water boiler system. Some companies just, you know, happily quote $1,000 more for not the exact brand, but for a very similar system. So in those cases where we already know that, you know, that property manager we're happy to work with, but he's not going to get us the best estimates. Like from the get-go, we don't ask them for the estimate. We just contact another company and say, hi, here's the property manager, give him a call and go and install that there, you know? And they're happy with it. Like apparently they're not making any extra money. That's less of a hassle for them too, I think.
Now we interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say that. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need somewhere quiet to hide away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. So the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher income, or a holiday home that you want rented out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today and see how they can help you maximize your property's income. You can browse their available properties or reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And just a quick reminder, if you're into a Tokyo family home for you and your family to purchase, or you need a mortgage, or you want to talk to anyone about these topics, Emil Gorgies, emil.gorgees at tokyorealty.co.jp. He's your man.
Yeah. Yeah, I find those middlemen that just charge the higher prices, they're just going to anyone, and the generic sort of full retail price is what they do it. It's not really their business. They're not trying to make the markup or anything like that. It's just they're just going to the easiest
channel, right?
Full price retail provider.
Yeah.
For the repair. And yeah, they just pay the fixed quote, whereas you can get good discounts. I was actually like on the topic of renovations, we've got a family that just bought a house, a brand new house, a brand new build, and we went but they want to add a few things. Okay, and because it was a tate uri, tate uri, I've explained before, a developer has built two houses side by side. They bought a block of land and built two side by side. We bought it early on, but a lot of stuff was already decided and we couldn't change it, okay? And now I say, look, so we went there the other day and it's pretty much completed on the outside. The inside is complete. The outside is still getting some, you know, the concreting and the decking sort of done. And we said, look, we want to add some extra power outlets, some extra like Ethernet cables, like wired internet setup, change the kitchen counter height, and a few modifications. And went there with the renovation company. What's going to happen? I know this, and this always happens because it's happened with myself and it happens with other clients, is especially with a new, like when it's for your personal home, you have this wish list of all the stuff you want done, right? How to make it perfect, right? When it's new, the additions and the modifications. And you get this, then you get the quotes. And usually the renovation quotes are very itemized. So for example, in the kitchen, okay, get a new kitchen. This is the kitchen counter. This is like, it might be 1 million yen for the kitchen, or, you know, 1.5 million yen for the kitchen. But then these other features, like, for example, the kitchen cabinet. So, oh, this kitchen cabinet, you thought it's only going to be, you know, it's going to be whatever price. It's itemized at 60,000 yen. Or the, you know, some, like I like the kitchen cabinets now, and I've got it in my house as well. The upper ones, it has a rack that you pull down, and it's mechanical. And the whole arm sort of comes down, and it's easy to access. It's not just some, like, useless one all the way up the top. That's like 50 or 60,000 yen just for that additional unit.
Yeah.
And so when you see it on the line item, people are like, oh, 60,000 yen just for the unit to come down to me at $600. Like, yeah, no. Or this extra outlet, I want a power outlet by the genkan, by the entrance, so I can charge my phone on the counter, right? Oh, just that is itemized at 40,000 yen. Like, when you look at the itemized prices, you're like, oh, no, I can't justify. It's really hard to justify. What really happens, though, is the renovation company, and like, we have a renovation team in our office. So our agency does this because we just hit about 1,000 properties under management, real estate management. So we have over 10 move in and outs, like move outs per week. So we're always doing wallpaper and this and that. So for our typical Japanese style lease rentals. So we got that renovation and cleaning team done in-house. And so now with clients as well, we do these renovations. And a lot of times, although it's itemized, it's not really the individual item price. there's kind of an overall price.
Including and some of these parts and labor and whatnot, right?
Yeah, parts and labor. Like, and it says this is the part, this is the labor for it. Oh, so you want that drop down cabinet attachment? That's an extra 60,000 plus 5,000 or 10,000 yen installation. But it's not really, you can't just really remove that line item and say, oh yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to do it without this and without that. It doesn't calculate that. Like when we do the quote, we kind of prepare it, but you have to put some numbers someplace, but it's really a more overall project, not individual items as such. Okay. Apart from the part, there is the part cost, of course, but then the installation is kind of an overall pricing. But one thing I tell my clients is, look, if you want all these additional additions done for 1 million yen, then budget about 1 million yen and don't think I'm not going to have the power outlet by the front door because it's an extra 40,000. When you have the house, you're never really going to notice that. It's part of the mortgage, etc. It's not just straight up 40,000 yen. You're going to just not like your front entrance. And 3 years down the track, you're going to think, you know what, whether I paid 44 million yen for this property or 44 million and 40,000 yen for this property,
yeah,
it's zero difference, but you're going to wish every time you walk in and out of the house, there was a power outlet there. You're going to wish every time you reach for that kitchen cabinet, you're going to wish that it was there. The house we're doing, it's got a deck, a wooden deck. It's got a little yard out the back, maybe like say 3 meters deep. It's, you know, substantial. But it comes with a deck that's already 90 centimeters deep, 90 centimeters by about 3 meters wide. And the client's thinking, look, why don't we just fill up the backyard with a deck, right? So it goes out 3 meters wide.
Yes.
And the wife said, yeah, exactly right, Aussies represent. And then the wife said, why don't we just put concrete? I want to be cheaper if we just put concrete or gravel down and not have the deck. And I'm like, yeah, like you can save 500,000 yen maybe, 400,000 yen, but every time you go, you're not going to say, oh, I'm so glad I did this.
Picky battles. So when we build our house, I wanted a full-size dishwasher. And normally when you build a house in Japan, the dishwashers are those stupid little narrow, they're drawers. You can't even put a proper-sized dinner plate in them. And I just hate them. And I had to kick and scream and fight. There were tears. It was not pretty when I built my house that I wanted a full-size, proper, pull-down door, 60 centimeter wide dishwasher, and I kicked and I screamed, and I had to pay for it. Like, I had to pay $3,000 for something that if I was in another country would be just standard, or it would cost me about $1,000, but I paid $3,000. I thank God every day for this dishwasher. It is the best purchase, and I'm so grateful that I dug my heels in. And it's like, this is a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle decision, and it's every day I would have cursed this stupid little drawer dishwasher if I had it. But it was you pick your battles.
Tracy, did you see my dishwasher? You came to my house. We had a Christmas party.
I did come to your house, and I did see your kitchen, but I don't recall the dishwasher. What is it?
Okay, because because ours is like same. It's a Western one. It's a pull down one. We did a 45 centimeter wide one, not the 60 centimeter. But it's the same thing, but just a 45 centimeter, the AEG brand. But it looks like the cabinetry. And we're talking about the cost, right? Yeah. But just that, like to get, because it's a Panasonic kitchen.
Yes,
right? I asked them, look, just leave an empty slot. Don't put a slot there. It's a 45 centimeter cabinet. It's going to go here. Just don't put a 40, or you can say, don't put a 60 centimeter slot. Don't put the slot in there. I'm going to put my own thing. And for the oven as well, a 60 centimeter wide oven. I go, just don't put anything under the stove. Just leave it as an empty cabinet. And I'll do my own. But then the builder said, okay, look, you know what? Get us the parts, like the washing machine and the oven, and we'll fit it for you. But the fridge, we talk about these costs, right? The fridge can come with a generic like white panel, or you can attach a matching panel for the cabinetry, right? The same as the kitchen. Now, Panasonic don't sell the doors by themselves or the panels by themselves. You have to buy, if I want a 45 centimeter wide, 60 centimeter high, 80 centimeter high, door to put as my dishwasher, like my fake door to make my dishwasher look like a cabinet, you have to buy the full cabinet. So just that was like 60,000 yen because I had to basically, they basically had to buy a full size cabinet with a door the size that I needed and just trash the cabinet and just take the door.
Well, maybe that's what I was charged for, because I have a Panasonic kitchen. I have a 60 centimeter dishwasher. It's an AEG as well. And it has the panel. It has the matching panel. So it looks like a cabinet.
I think we probably got the same dishwasher. I got the 45 centimeter version. Yeah. With the buttons on the top when you open it.
I love it. Love it. Yeah.
The same.
Absolutely. I would like sleep in it if I could. No, but it's so good to have that proper dishwasher. It's just a lifestyle thing.
And you're postponing, we've got a garden around the house. It's not a house, it's a ground floor condo unit. We've got like a garden terrace around it. And we've been there for 2 years, and it's only a couple of months ago that we finally got a water tap installed in the garden. Like, when we wanted to water the plants, we used to just carry big bottles of shochu outside every time, because it was $300. And $300. The amount of, you can't quantify the amount of joy that you get from just having something convenient in your home.
Yeah. It's the opportunity. It's the opportunity cost. I mean, when I built my house, I did not take up their offer of the outside, you know, the outside landscaping and putting the driveway in, because the price that they quoted for the plus alpha of that was just vulgar. It was disgusting, and I just
landscaping is nuts. Yeah.
They don't do it. They outsource it. And then, of course, they triple the price of the contractor. So they'll give you a quote, which is the quote of how much it's actually going to cost to do, plus their fee. Because, you know, these are big corporate companies. They've got to pay, you know, they've got to earn their money somehow. And it's like, nah, that's just not happening. So I went directly to a contractor and did it myself for a third of the price. Happy that I did that.
Mm. Yeah, so there are some things that are like that, like the chumonjus, like they're in addition to the house. Whereas there are some stuff which are in the house. So actually, you know, let's talk about some. You know, we're sort of on the topic, and I think we'll wrap up soon. It's the last one of the year, but I do want to say, just, you know, we're on the topic of it. The great, I say, not overly expensive, but great features that you have of in your house that are worth. That are worth kind of every penny. So for me, I've got a few, and these are things that, you know, when you build a house, it's easier to do. But definitely, I put on my balcony when I built it, when the house came done, a natural gas outlet.
Yes, I did that too.
Yeah, I think natural gas.
So yes, I did that.
Because the gas tank is like for the barbecue. Is crazy complicated in Japan. It's hard to get. Whereas in Australia, you just go to any gas station, do a swap and go type stuff. Here, it's really hard. So, so basically, my barbecue now just runs on natural gas. So just to heat it up, I just turn it on and I leave it there for 15 or 20 minutes to get to a nice 300 degrees, so it gets nice and hot. And when I finish grilling as well, I just leave it on for like 15 minutes on full blast, like empty, and it just chars and cooks off all the fat and just burns it. And it's so easy to scrape off. Whereas you can't spend an hour or like, you know, half hour or an hour of just leaving the gas on to heat and to clear the grill when you've got a paved gas bottle.
This is a personal thing, probably not for people who are watching. I have that on my balcony as well, but I have not found a Japanese barbecue company that will give me that I can hook up to.
What do you mean?
What barbecue have you got?
Oh, a barbecue. Oh, yeah. No, no. Yeah. So you can try to get into the barbecue discussion. There's natural gas and LP gas, like the tank gas. The LP gas runs a lot hotter. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot stronger. So it's called the orifice where the gas comes out inside each burner. It's like a little bolt with a tiny hole in it, and that regulates, that controls how much gas flow can come out.
Sure. Okay. No, you've got to change the burners over.
No, not the burners. Just the orifice, like a little bolt.
But which so, com- yeah. I've tried to buy a barbecue from Weber. I've tried to buy barbecue. No one will sell me a gas that they won't guarantee a they won't guarantee the barbecue if I change the burner or if I change anything to do with the thing.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. But you do it anyway. So you just change the orifice to a natural gas. Like Weber, I've got a Weber barbecue. Go to eBay. And so I've got a Weber barbecue or this brand barbecue. I need a natural gas conversion kit. Weber used to sell them originally, but they said it's too dangerous because people don't do it properly. But you just unscrew the you take it apart, unscrew with a 3 burner, unscrew the little gold bolt with a hole in it. Bolt might be 1 millimeter wide for the natural gas, for the LP gas, and maybe 1.5 or 2 millimeters wide for the
We'll continue this conversation online. Yeah.
If you're like me, you just invite someone like Emil over, give him a glass of wine, and just get him to do it for you.
Yeah, no. This is something that has been on my bucket list for 2 years. Yeah, like you're saying, Ziv, it's like you didn't have like something in your house for 2 years. This is something on its our wish list for the last 3 years, and that would make my husband very, very happy if I could finally. Anyway, so what are the things? So barbecue was one. What's the other thing that you paid for? Dishwasher was one.
Oh yeah, dishwasher and oven. Like you saw how much I cooked at my Christmas party. I think we had 6 kilos of pulled pork. I think 8 kilos of chicken. We had 60 people come through for the day. Mm-hmm. It was pretty chuckers.
Hell of a Christmas party.
Yeah,
it was fun. Yeah.
Lots of booze. And what else is good?
Gas dryer. I've got a gas clothes dryer.
I'm fine with the regular one. Mm. But that's only part of the house. That's
a clothes dryer. I didn't even know they exist.
Cheaper.
Oh, cheaper. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Cheaper and it gets done in half the time. But you have to get it. When we built the house, we actually had to have it so that it has an exhaust fan, like it goes out of the house, right?
Yeah.
So it's like double the price to buy them new, like to buy them just to buy the unit, but it just uses up so much less power and like it's much cheaper to run.
So the most coin laundries will have the gas powered unit. So if you look next time, if you go to a coin laundry, you'll see there's actually a gas outlet and a big duct to go out for those dryers. I guess with that, the unit itself is one thing, but yeah, the connection, right? When getting placed, like get the gas connection. But the stuff that I like in my place are the automatic sinks. So my kitchen sink, it's automatic. You just put your hand underneath and it comes out.
Oh, I haven't got that.
That's one. And I've got that in the bathrooms as well. So basically all the toilets have that little sink on the side. Like mm-hmm. the two toilets have a sink on the side. It's great with the kids. So you don't have to touch anything. Just put your hand there and the water comes out. And same in the semi-dye, the vanity unit in the bathroom. It has that too. So that's really good, especially with little kids. They can just wash their hands like that. Even our soap dispensers are the automatic ones. So the kitchen goes, and they're only 2,000 yen on Amazon. Just do that, like the bubble soap. So because otherwise it leaves residue and takes time to rinse off for kids. Just do that and wash their hands. And probably the next one that I'm always grateful for is the toilet, the automatic seat lifting.
Oh, no. I've got the automatic seat flushing. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. The flushing, yeah. I think a lot of that do it. But the upgrade that you need to pay is the ones that automatically lift the seat up. So you open the door and it lifts the seat up. And if you want, for guys, if you're standing, you need to leave even the cover lifts up automatically. And then for the guys, if you're standing, you push the button and then the main seat goes up. You just walk out and it closed by itself in after a minute.
I'm the only woman in my house. I'm the only female in my house. It's all me, man. I'm the manual. So
yeah. That's what I think. Yeah, it's good value.
And do they cost much to maintain? Like, do they ever break down or are they?
Oh, my lid. I had one lid that broke.
Mm-hmm.
Family of five. And so it gets used a lot.
And then you've got little kids in your house too. So things tend to break with littler kids, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yes. But the thing is with the kids, it's you don't want them to the boy always to have to come and lift up the seat and then use their hand as well and lift up the toilet seat. all the time, and then close it down with their hand, just touching the toilet seat all the time. It's like, you don't want that. And even though we have the automatic
and then come and give you a hug.
Yeah, like, who knows if they're washing their hands? We tell them to wash their hands, but all that, it's just just push the button and no one's touching the seat.
Japanese tech, if you're watching this from overseas, Japanese technology, I mean, it's pretty standard, like, you know.
Japanese toilets, oh my God.
Japanese toilets are just, incredible.
They're amazing. Let's not get into that, quite dig deep into that topic on the recorded podcast, though.
Yeah, so what are the other things? I think having, like, taps outside. So I, on my balcony, I put a natural gas thing, and also I put hot and cold water on my balcony. So so that I have a sink on my balcony, and which is actually my roof deck, mainly because I didn't want to be schlepping. And it's because up on my roof deck, I've actually got a cupboard, and it's got its own set of plates and knives and forks and what have you. So the only thing I have to be schlepping up and down the stairs is food and booze. And so I can, the dishes and everything, the dishes and everything stay there. They get washed there in hot and cold water, and they get put away there, and then they're done. Because also they're outdoor, suitable for outdoors. So,
For me,
after our last move, we've decided that we're never again getting a multi-level home. Like, one level is more than enough. No going up and down the stairs for us.
Yeah, you're just getting old, Ziv, though. It's like,
I know.
I like the hot water for the kids' pool. Pool on the balcony.
Yeah.
It's just not freezing cold. It's just, you get some warm water going on.
Interesting.
It's just more enjoyable.
Yeah. So we've got outdoor. We've got an outdoor hose, which is great for, like, you know, especially when you need to hose down the outside of your house. So we've actually got a high speed water cleaner, because Japanese houses, they get mold and mildew on the outside, so you can on the concrete. So we've got that. What other? I don't have an oven. We decided against an oven. I've got an on bench oven.
Ah.
So, but my gas dryer I love. So,
All right. I'll have to call it a day soon, folks.
All righty. Well, you know, Mary, I don't know when you're going to put this out, Ziv, but we are recording this on December 22. So, we are just coming up to Christmas. So, Merry Christmas to you all. And Matt, if you watch this, Merry Christmas, Matt.
Yeah, happy holidays and a happy new year. We're probably not going to be speaking before.
Oh, yes, and happy holidays, Zip. Yes, so you've had Monica.
Oh, yeah, I'll celebrate any holiday. I am not discriminatory at all. Any excuse for a holiday. we'll see you all next
in
year.
In the new year, exactly. So what topics are we going to cover in the new year? We should make a plan.
Real estate.
Actually, you know what? You know what? People need to write to us and say, what do you want us to ramble about? Because, you know, what is top of mind? Especially, you know, 2022, it's hopefully going to be a different landscape. So what are people interested in?
That would be good. I hope by next time we get together, there's going to be some forecast on when we can actually start going to other countries and have people come here and stuff. That'd be good. But I wouldn't get my hopes too high, not just yet.
Yeah, it's another local Christmas.
Yeah. Yep.
Local New Year.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Everyone. Well, thanks, folks.
Thank you so much.
Happy 2021.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yo, Toshio.
All right, so that's it from us for this year, folks. And as Tracy was saying there, we'd really love it if you could write to us and let us know what topics you'd like us to discuss next year and on future episodes, whether on the panel or just for me to break down for you if you prefer. So please feel free to reach out to us in the comments section of wherever you might have found this episode, or via email if you prefer on info@nippontradings.com. And if you happen to be tuning in before the end of the year, here's wishing you and your loved ones a relaxing holiday and a fantastic, exciting new year ahead. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. if you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.